Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 264.
This week on the podcast, Trump is furious that his gifted roll of paper towels wasn't enough to clean up all of Puerto Rico.
Plus, you can now thank Trump directly for your rising healthcare costs. Thanks, Agent Orange.
And Trump's Iran policy is mostly dictated by a fictitious pallet of cash.
Plus, the whole world is just all sexual predators.
And Steve Bannon promotes his Shakespearean murder platform at the Values Voters Summit. It's adorable he thinks that reference will land.
Plus, Mike Pence hates America, and we have proof.
And Esteban Guest joins us in the studio.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
That's our website. You should leave us a review on iTunes. You should share this with your friends.
Yes.
We talk about politics every single week.
That's right.
And you could be joining the fun.
Yes.
And we have a couple of California-focused stories before we jump in with our guest.
Yeah.
Because we are having some rage issues with Dianne Feinstein right
now. We really are. She announced this week on Twitter. Let's not pretend like she knows how to use Twitter. She didn't tweet anything. But anyway, she is running for office again, which we feared that she might. But if she wins re-election, by the time this next term is over, she's going to be in her 90s.
She, I think, is the oldest person in the Senate.
I think she is, actually. Yeah.
And you know what? There's a retirement age for a reason.
Yeah.
And Medicare for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I have sort of, like, come to terms with, like, the fact that, like, yes, I think that she should retire. But, like, my issue with her needing to retire is not so much that she's old. Because, like,
it's that she doesn't represent California as a modern state.
Exactly.
Well.
And that she is robbing so many people who could be running for that seat. You know, it's like we have worked so hard to get a bench, and we have also we have so many people who could have that job, who are half of her age, and who could have it into their 90s, who could have it for the next
45
years.
Nobody should have their Senate seat until their 90s, by the way. Everyone's too old over there already. But also, one of the things that you use the Senate to do is to develop talent for people that are going to be on the national stage.
Right.
Develop a bench for the presidential race, develop a bench for the cabinet.
Right.
You use the Senate to help bring in people who are, you know, showing themselves to be successful at the state level.
Right.
And California is a state that needs some influence right now.
Yes.
Because we represent a fifth of the economy,
right,
and we are being essentially treated by this administration like we don't exist.
Right. And we don't need a 90-year-old who is, but just a month ago, talking about how she still thinks Donald Trump could be a great president.
Yeah.
That is not what we are looking for in the Senate right now. And, you know, Barbara Boxer, the last time she was up for re-election, she retired, and we got Kamala Harris, who has been one of the sort of, like, most outspoken critics of the Trump administration. We could have that again in 2018. We have so many people who, you know, we've got a governor's race coming up, and it's got a million people running in
it. We have
because
a crowded field for every race.
For
remember
every
how many people
race
ran against Kamala Harris for that seat?
Right,
it was
exactly
like 32 people.
Yes, and we've got mayors in this state who are acting like they're going to run for president, for Christ's sake. We have so many people who would be great at her job. And I don't want to belittle her service because she has sort of like, you know, she's still an influential voice. She still can get things done for us. And she has gotten things done for us in the past. She's a good voice on gun control, which we're talking about now, or maybe aren't, I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, she has done good things for us, but there are other people who could be doing different and better things for us.
Well, she just, when she took office, California was a different state.
Yes.
It was the state of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
it was
we had a
state,
republic. Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, it was a state that, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger became the governor in. This
it was
not
the state that was leading the resistance.
No. And this is the state that's leading the resistance because we are impartially redistricted now, because the fact that we are a majority progressive state is finally able to be represented in our state government. But because of that, we have a responsibility to make sure that our voice is being used effectively as the leader of the resistance.
Right.
And this is, I don't need somebody who has been failing to get gun control passed for the 100 years that she's been in office. You know, like, we've got to try something new.
Yeah.
The gun control thing, she's great on it because she cares very deeply about that issue, and I respect that she has been a leading voice on this issue for years. But nothing she has done has worked. So we're not losing a voice on gun control if she leaves office.
Yeah.
Respect that at the time that she came to power, or that the time that she took office in California, we were a fairly moderate state. We're not anymore.
No, we're not.
We don't need to be calling her to tell her to not vote for Jeff Sessions.
That's what I was going
to
say.
We don't need to waste all of our time.
Yeah, we didn't have to call Kamala Harris to remind her that Jeff Sessions was a racist. We had to call Dianne Feinstein.
Exactly.
And it would be nice to have someone maybe like Kevin DeLeon, who I don't know much about, but I have a feeling as a person of color himself, he's Hispanic, probably doesn't need to be reminded that Jeff Sessions is racist. I bet he knows.
Yeah.
And that is what we need as a state.
Yes. And we need the chance for someone who has, you know, he's the head of our state Senate here. Right. We have a very progressive state government here. We need a chance for some of those state level politicians to find a path to a national platform.
Right.
Because without that path, we do what we did under the Clintons, we do what we did under the Obamas, and we fail to develop a bench. And then suddenly when we have a race against a complete nonsense person, we don't have anyone to run.
Right. Exactly.
You know, the last time that we developed a bench, it was because George Bush was the president.
Right.
And we needed someone. And we had no one. And we ended up with a freshman senator who was just like the most charming human being on the planet. And you know what? It worked for us.
Right.
We're never going to get a chance to find out who the most charming person in the Democratic sphere is if we don't let any of those people have a platform. Right. Dianne Feinstein she's not our next president.
No,
I'm sorry
not.
About it.
She's not the most charming person either.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And this is problem that I feel like we are having right now as a party, where there is a generation of people in the Democratic Party who are doing things in an old-fashioned way and are not budging.
Yeah.
And that was part of the problem with this presidential campaign. That
100%.
Was part of the that's been our problem in California. Barbara Boxer, by the way, would have been a better representative of the state of California had she been
the
one to stay.
I know, exactly.
Then
yes.
I mean, she's sort of Bernie Sanders level.
Right.
So I feel like we can't have lost Barbara Boxer and then be stuck forever with a 90-year-old senator who represents Reagan era California.
Yeah.
That just can't be it. That can't be our strategy.
Nope.
In any case.
And it might not be.
It might not be because we have jungle primaries here and nobody knows what's going to happen.
Right, exactly. She's going to be up against it. I mean, I think
she's going to end up in a general with a Democrat.
I think
and
she
has never had to do that before.
No, this election could be fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. I think it'll be fun. I think I'm just going to be tearing my hair out wondering why we're bothering.
I know. Yes, exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Especially because we're a state dealing with disasters.
Oh, God.
You guys, the whole state's falling apart.
Yeah.
We have the worst wildfires that we've ever had.
Yeah.
Just like tearing through neighborhoods all over Northern California.
Yeah, literally the worst wildfires.
Literally, we've ever
had. Yeah, exactly. They're up in wine country right now.
So it might be tearing through your wine budget as well.
Yeah, exactly. But when you look at these pictures, I mean, it's just whole neighborhoods and like small towns just burned to the ground. I mean, it's crazy. And they're moving quickly. They're not super under control. They've been hard to get that way. The air quality is terrible too. Like I've heard some story on NPR that the air quality is the worst that it's ever been in San Francisco since they began testing it. It's crazy. And 23 people have died. There's tons more missing.
Yeah.
A lot of those probably are people who were burned. I mean, they're searching, through these communities that have been burned down with cadaver dogs.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean, these fires are so fast moving that people aren't having time to evacuate.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't get the memo the first time, you end up getting mowed down by a fire.
Yeah.
It's not a good scene.
No, it's...
Where's the national news? Nobody knows.
Yeah.
I have two thoughts about it. One of which is that no one at the federal level cares about California. So that's just going to be like, well, you made your bed. So...
Yeah, exactly.
You lived in a place.
Yeah.
But I also feel...
You have a budget surplus. You pay for it.
Exactly. I also feel like we are just getting disaster fatigue.
Yeah.
As a world.
Yeah.
The world has disaster fatigue. It's like Puerto Rico's has no power and is underwater.
Houston's
out underwater.
Mexico
City's rubble. Florida's underwater.
All of Asia was underwater big amount of time. Yeah.
We've already had wildfires in the city of LA.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
I mean, it's chaos.
Yeah.
Global warming is a bitch.
Yeah.
Man.
Sure is.
It's unpredictable nonsense at every turn.
Yeah.
And I have never trusted nature.
No.
I mean, I think if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you're aware of our extreme distrust of nature.
Yeah.
But if you had not got the message till now and were just loving your hiking life,
people,
wake up.
Yeah.
This shit's dangerous.
It's hot. Just don't leave the house.
Don't, or be in the house. Don't be anywhere. Because
I know.
Inside or outside, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yikes.
If you're in Florida, especially,
you might just get eaten by a sinkhole.
You could fall into a sinkhole in your house or outside your house at any moment.
Yeah. There's a hole the size of Maine in Antarctica right now.
Yes! Another time that nature screwed us over. A Maine-sized sinkhole?
A hole?
In Antarctica?
A hole in the earth.
That's not what you want.
No!
I wonder who's gonna come out through it.
God, right?
I wonder what this... Like, maybe that's...
Maybe.
The end.
Maybe it is.
The hole in Antarctica seems more ominous than any of these
really
things
does.
To me. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whatever. In any case, we have a great guest with us this week.
Yeah, it's fun.
His name is Esteban Gast. He's a comedian. He's also an entrepreneur. He's been working recently with this company, Scripted, that has sort of helping improve access for people in Hollywood. It runs like an online script database that does not have bars to entry, such as... needing to know someone already.
Right.
And the CEO that he's working with is also really great. She's another friend of mine. Her name's Denise. But please welcome to the podcast, Esteban Gast. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
Yeah.
We are excited to have you, especially right now, because we were planning to talk more in depth about what the situation in Puerto Rico in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria has been, and to sort of help our listeners understand a little bit about the context of some of Trump's comments about Puerto Rico slash his lack of desire to admit that Puerto Rico is in America.
Yeah, someone should just clarify that to him. I feel like...
We've been shocked at his lack of knowledge of over the weeks.
He also spoke to the president of the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Yes, amazing.
He does every day in his own way.
Yeah, that's true.
But... we are still sort of like slowly hearing reports about what's going on in Puerto Rico, and nobody really knows.
Yeah.
So to begin with, you grew up there, right?
Yes. So for context, I lived there 6 years. I lived in Mayagüez, which is on sort of the other side of San Juan. Mm-hmm. It's on the east side. This side. I'm pointing with my hands.
You guys know where it is. Sure.
It's on the right side.
It is on the side. If you look at it, it's opposite San Juan. That side.
Yeah. The other side.
Clearly, I am an authority on the island. I'm like, oh, which side is? It's away. It's this way. That definitely seems the east. I'm pointing. All right. Anywho, I grew up there, I swear. 6 years, my parents were professors at different universities, but my father in the University of Puerto Rico, which is really interesting because they've like shut down. I mean, everything is in critical shape.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And then, so from Trump's comments, it's insane. We can dive into that. But I can tell you my experience having friends and family friends and things like that there. One of my best friends, one of the scariest things was when the hurricane hit. We didn't hear from his parents for 6 days. And,
oh, my God.
And that is insane. And the whole time you're thinking, oh, my goodness, like, that's because they don't have power. That's why. This is a power issue. It's not a safety issue.
Right.
But, like, to not hear from loved ones for 6 days is absolutely insane. So for those 6 days, I was going to, like, I was going to sleep with a knot in my stomach. And those aren't my parents. Right. Those are my friend's parents. I was like, I cannot imagine. So he's actually there now, and there's a ton of people, a lot of Puerto Ricans are doing a lot because the government is not doing that much. Slash, I know we're going to talk about this, not looking at death counts and all these weird things, manipulating all these things. That's like, okay, well, there's people on the ground telling you this. What incentive do they have to say, oh, like, yeah, there might be more people, perhaps dead. Perhaps look into that.
Some people are missing, but we don't need to worry about that yet.
We don't know.
So I grew up there for a little, and it just has been, it's been tough. Every comment Trump makes is just more and more.
Like an infuriating.
Oh my goodness. Or like, what is it? Salt in a wound? Is that the expression?
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's it.
Whatever. I'm as good with idioms as I am knowing where Mayagüez is. Definitely, guys. It's definitely east. I've thought a lot about it.
Right.
So... we heard yesterday that the governor there says that power should be 95% returned by Christmas. But when we think about that in the context of how other disasters or other, you know, American disaster victims have fared, that's insane.
That's crazy. We're talking about power.
We haven't started November
electricity.
Yet.
I know. I realized that, you know, I was just at Cost Plus last weekend and they had Christmas decorations up, but it is still the middle of October.
Thanksgiving has not happened.
It hasn't
and I've
happened.
Taken a hard line on pre-Thanksgiving Christmas
once
decorations.
Once we get to fall, it really all the holidays just sort of turn into one large holiday.
Exactly.
Really, what happens.
But
it's still
one
only
that's
October.
Not months from now.
Right.
One that is months
so Christmas
from now.
Is quite a while from now.
Also,
so that's
what a just
crazy.
Perfect, just timely present. That's like, here you go. Basic power.
Right. I know, right?
The least thing that the government should be providing.
I know, right?
yeah, by Christmas.
We thought you deserved a reminder that you're a definitive third priority, if not even on the list of disaster victims right now.
They're probably planning that just so Trump can swoop in and say, Merry Christmas.
Oh, he's bringing that back.
He's bringing that back. We're going to get there later.
War on Christmas. Ugh.
My favorite thing about the war on Christmas is that my mother has taken an opposite tact where she is now firmly in a war on Christmas, where she will not say Merry Christmas to people, even if they are celebrating Christmas with her. So, like, we celebrate Christmas every year, and during the Christmas holidays, our family will call and wish us a Merry Christmas, and she will stick with Happy Holidays, even if her own sister calls her on Christmas to wish her a Merry Christmas.
I'm surprised she hasn't gone, like, one step further and started, like, wishing people, like, Merry Winter Solstice
or something like that. My parents used to do a winter solstice party.
I know.
For a while, they did Santa Lucia parties because they were just like, that's out of the box. No one will know what that is. And then they did winter solstice parties. They have been firmly on the de-holidayize the holidays train for a while.
So they are the liberals' conservative sphere.
But they only started doing it because of this fake war on Christmas.
Right.
They were just like, fuck it then. Right. Why am I being wished Merry Christmas? They don't know if I celebrate Christmas. They live in New York City. A fourth of the city is Jewish anyway. So, you know, whatever. In any case, returning to Puerto Rico, we still have something like over 80% of the island still has no power. And too much of the island also still has no water, which is a more important kind of utility, I would argue, in the post-disaster realm.
You'd like to have both.
Ideally, you have both.
Yeah.
You're asking too much from your government.
I know.
Over 30% of the island still has no water.
And then there's issues with the water.
Exactly.
So they're competing. This is so great that one official, I don't remember who, was like, hey guys, the water's good. And the other one was like, no, you should boil it. And they said that at the same day, at different press conferences, which is amazing.
Right.
Which is also the communication strategy, I feel like, of Trump's team, is say different things the same day from different
this
places.
This is also, if I learned anything from 9/11, it's A, don't trust the water. Because months after that disaster, we started getting weird notes home that were like, don't drink out of the water fountains. No reason. Cool. Bye. So that is something that I would always be careful about. But water is one of the most, if we've learned anything from the Flint situation, it's that not having water is a huge pain in the ass, more of a pain in the ass than even not having power. And it's a huge public health issue.
I was going to say, it's more than a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
It's a
pain in the collective ass of everyone who wants public health. But so, in any case, the House approved a bigger aid package for Puerto Rico, but Trump has been spending the week sending mixed messages / trying to work out his rage towards Puerto Rico in a way that doesn't result in him being just, like, destroyed by the press. So on Thursday, he tried the strategy of threatening Puerto Rico. You know, he's been using this strategy of claiming that, like, sort of implying that Puerto Ricans are being lazy about their own cleanup. Like, he keeps relying on these bizarre sort of, you know, comments about how it's not happening fast enough and people need to essentially pull themselves up by their bootstraps and just, like, figure it out. And so on Thursday, he kind of put the, you know, the star on the top of the Christmas tree that is those comments.
And we're saying Christmas trees now. We're taking back all the trees. They're not a holiday tree. All the trees are Christmas trees.
He said, we cannot keep FEMA, the military, and first responders, who've been amazing under the most difficult circumstances, in PR forever. Which is a threatening thing to say when you've barely tried to get them to PR in the first place.
Right.
But okay. And people didn't like that. It was at the end of a long rant about how the Puerto Rican debt crisis is all their fault and no one could have done anything about it except they just poorly managed their money and it had nothing to do with.
And Trump has never had any financial missteps.
He
is also known work ethic.
Yeah.
And he's never been bailed out by taxpayers.
Right.
Never
and
once.
And doesn't he also owe Puerto Rico himself
money?
Yeah. That whole thing where, like, he, like, built something there or did something and, like, then basically, like, part of his bankruptcy is that he owes them, like, $500,000 or something like that.
He is sort of like a personal example of what a debt crisis is.
Right.
debt crisis personified. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was also reading, and it was FEMA was in New Orleans 7 years or something like that. Like, they were on the ground, and then there's still a presence, but they're, and this is like This is
right, 3 weeks later.
3 weeks. I was going to say, it's not even a month.
They can't stay there forever.
And he's like, oh, well, that's because the attention span is so short that he's like, we're still talking about Puerto Rico.
Right.
Well, and he's mad because no one is saying nice things about him in Puerto Rico because he keeps doing images. He keeps having sort of like photo ops where he's like throwing paper towels at them and things like that.
Puerto Ricans, I don't know why he doesn't just stop talking about it. I mean, like, he shouldn't.
Right.
But speaking negatively about it like this, like, he could just secretly leave FEMA down there for a while or let FEMA do what it is that FEMA does without him getting involved.
Right.
And
you
not have to, like, make an ass of himself on Twitter talking about how they brought it on themselves.
He has to make an ass out of himself on Twitter. That
he doesn't know how not to.
Right, that is the one thing he has to do. He has some internal...
I don't know how many times on this podcast I've just been like, I don't know why he just doesn't do that.
You do know why, though.
I do know why.
We all know why.
His advisors must be so frustrated.
I think they are.
Because they're just like, what? They are, objectively.
They actually, yes.
If we're frustrated being like, you could be such a better evil villain.
Right.
If you had a little bit of self-awareness.
He's a loser. He doesn't even know how to be an evil villain well. That's why that's why he wasn't evil enough to lose the presidency. Like, he's evil in like an incompetent way where he is sort of like, you know, his sort of weird impulse control issues are, you know. And they let Anthony Weiner be taken down for that. I mean, please.
Right.
Yeah. He at least stayed off Twitter once Twitter
right.
took him down the first time.
Yeah.
Stayed off Twitter once he was forced off Twitter.
Exactly.
He
went to a different website at least.
Right. Yeah,
innovation. It's so funny when you, like, or not funny, it's frustrating because, like, all of Puerto Rico's crisis, like, he's like, oh, the infrastructure sucks and stuff like that, is all largely due to Congress and to, like,
yes.
all the deals that have been, and Puerto Rico can't declare bankruptcy, a bunch of other states have, because of different rules, and then they, like, owe Wall Street money, and they're crazy interest. It just is, it's the most manipulative thing ever. It's like, yeah.
They got shock doctrined, and they're a U.S. territory.
Yes.
And so it's not, it's like we shock doctrined ourselves, which is stupid.
Right.
And now we're acting like they don't belong to us. Like, it's the same, it's like if any place in America was having a financial, you know, was having a deficit, was running a huge deficit, or was being Kansas.
I was going to say, there are states that
are doing that. We're not lecturing Sam Brownback, unfortunately, because he's someone who really could use the lecture.
Yeah, we should lecture him.
Right?
Yeah. Let's send this to Sam.
Right.
I was having a conversation a while ago with a friend of mine who's Republican, and then, but he's like John Huntsman Republican.
Yeah,
sure. You know what I mean?
Classic.
Yeah. Which I was like, heck yeah.
He's a rhino. That's what he is.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Bannon would hate him because he's just like, oh, well, I believe this. And he was saying, it was a great conversation. I recommend having them with calm Republicans. And he was like, oh, it's something that's unfair is when Democrats are like, oh, Republicans are racist and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, but like you look at the stuff they favor, like they favor the current power structures. but okay, I understand that might be frustrating, especially, you know, he's like, okay, Mitt Romney, whatever. Like, yes, he's got these things, but let's not just throw these labels, et cetera, et cetera. And then you think about Trump. And he started his campaign saying Mexicans are they're not bringing their best people, stuff like, and then you just, the response from Texas, who he likes because they're white, and, you know, like, and in Puerto Rico, it just is so nuts. It's
so clear. Well, and
then even Paul Ryan, dirtbag Paul Ryan has said about Trump, oh, that's textbook definition of racism when he's talking about the judge. It's so crazy. That's like.
Yeah.
This, you know, my friend who was Republican had this compelling argument that if it would have gone differently, or they would have had, I don't know who else, you know, like Marco Rubio, you're like, okay, well, you're right. Let's calm down. Let's find common ground. And here's Trump literally being like, oh, Texas, you're the best. God is with you. You are the chosen people.
Puerto Rico, here's some paper towels.
Puerto Rico, you're being lazy. Here's some paper towels. Clean it up yourself.
Why are you in debt when we put you in debt? Right. You guys are brown. This is bad. It's insane. It's absolutely.
Yeah. So on Friday, he found out that people weren't happy that he was threatening to take the disaster response away from Puerto Rico. And instead, continued to lecture everyone about how their debt was of their own making and they're terrible at everything, but then also said that he would always be with them. He didn't say FEMA would always be with them. He said he would always be with them.
His heart.
He's
his thoughts and
the
prayers.
Worst person of in this scenario to have always with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's the last person that Puerto Rico needs right. with them. They need all the other people with them.
Yeah, exactly.
But FEMA also had to tweet independently and be like, we'll also be there.
Right. By the way.
Right. Yeah.
He then spoke about it at the Value Voters Summit because he was trying to really drive the point home.
Yeah.
Talked about how much he loves the people of Puerto Rico.
Which is a hate group, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Value Voters Summit.
Yeah.
It's classified as one.
Well, we're going to talk about it in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll get there.
It meets the criteria pretty well.
Yeah.
But also, one of the things that's been politicized about this Puerto Rico crisis that we mentioned earlier is the death count, because the official government death count is like artificially low by an amount that's kind of absurd. And Vox published a report this week that said that the official count, which is 45, is ignoring 81 deaths that are linked directly or indirectly to the hurricane, 450 reported deaths that haven't been investigated and are, you know, related to causes unknown, 69 people still missing. I mean, there's hundreds of people that are either dead or missing still in Puerto Rico that are not being included in the official death count, which affects the perception here on the mainland and makes it more difficult for people to be like, well, we should be providing relief there. Yeah. We should be providing resources. I mean, the things that you need in a post-disaster where hundreds of people are missing are
literally
not being provided.
Probably 10 times the amount that they're saying that it
is.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
Yeah.
And so two congresspeople, Nydia Velasquez from New York and Benny Thompson from Missouri, of all places, wrote a letter to the DHS being like, can we work on this?
Right.
Can we get a death count that's more accurate? So they asked for a report in 10 days that I'm sure will not be delivered. But this is one of the things that prevents us from seeing the magnitude of the crisis over there.
Right.
And so there's so many things that are political that I never thought of as political until
like
this presidency.
Death count. The death count.
Yeah. Like, if we just pretend there's no death count, or we just don't have to worry about what's happening in Puerto Rico.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I never thought about doing
all
that.
All facts now are no longer facts.
Right.
Yes.
So
saying,
oh, yeah, 500 people have died. That's not a fact we like.
No, exactly.
We're
going to
provide an alternative
45
fact.
45 people.
Right. The fake media just made that number up.
Exactly.
Do you see when he's like, I call it the fake media? And it's like, no, you call it fake news.
Right.
Fake
you don't news. Even know what you call it.
I know.
He's like switching to fake media now, which I appreciate because it's incorporating perhaps even this podcast. Maybe
exactly.
You listening?
Well,
this is your new Fox
your
and
new
Friends,
Fox
Donnie.
And Friends.
Which is getting longer. Did you see that? They're adding hours to that.
That's
Which his productivity is going to go down because that takes out 2 hours from his day.
I know.
I'm hoping that they're also like that in those additional hours, they will find time to accidentally report a few facts that they had not had time. Like, I feel like, what are they going to talk about for all of that time? Their crazy conspiracy theories can only last them so long.
Yeah, but you see what Hillary Clinton's up to?
That's true.
They love.
Right. Uh-huh.
She's sick
she
and
Bill
she's not
aren't speaking
it.
To each other.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Did you hear that?
No, but so Donald and Melania
classic.
Have such
right.
a good marriage.
Yeah, they're the picture of a perfect
hashtag relationship goals. The way that
their
she icily slaps his hand away.
That relationship is what my relationship goals with Donald Trump would be.
Right? I know. Yeah, I mean, she's doing it right.
Yeah,
she is
sure.
all of us being like, no, fuck
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't look at me.
Don't look at me.
Moving on, we also had some exciting solo attempts from Donald Trump to dismantle the Affordable Care Act in the only way that he can at this point because he is left without any legislative options because Congress can't get their act together. So he signed two executive orders this week that are
Whoa. Doesn't Obama sign executive orders
right.
and we hate him for
this
it?
This guy.
Whoa, yeah. Whoa. Does he think he's king or something?
Yeah.
This guy?
Oh.
Yeah. Just a... Just a couple of emergency executive orders on the Affordable Care Act that will totally destabilize the healthcare market.
Right.
So fun times for all.
Yeah.
There are two of them. One of them is really simple, and it's that he's taking away those co-payment subsidies or the cost-sharing subsidies that they're always railing on about.
Right.
That Nick Mulvaney is like very angry about.
That they were illegal.
Yes.
Because they never voted on them or something, but they're in the bill. It's Richard. They're it's ridiculous. There have been some lawsuits about like the legality of those because like they aren't necessarily like explicitly funded in any sort of
right.
budget or but anything. But they're the things that basically like allow the insurance companies to like give us healthcare like at a decent price.
Yes.
So we're gonna stop paying those now.
Yeah,
so
that sounds fun.
Not great.
This is like he has a lot of like devils and angels in his ears all the time. This is like the Nick Mulvaney devil.
Yeah.
Who got him to be incensed about this minor thing that he doesn't actually have to care about.
Right.
But the first executive order is much more confusing, and we're going to attempt to explain to you what it does so that we can explain what the outcome will be. But it involves us learning new and boring things about the healthcare marketplace. So that's a fair warning. Essentially, it doesn't actually change anything. It instructs Trump's cabinet to consider proposing regulatory changes that would meet these goals.
He's done so many executive orders that are just like proposing. Telling someone else to think about doing something.
Yeah. They love, and that's kind of how they roll. Like, that's what Betsy DeVos does too. Like, they all love to consider thinking about at some future date a thing that they promised they would do definitively on day one.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's how they roll amazing. In the Trump administration.
I wish we could just use that all the time. I am considering thinking about getting my act together and becoming a real adult.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And
yeah.
I've signed something to prove it. So you know that I'm really taking
this
action.
This is a classic American strategy anyway. Yeah. Like, this was our strategy with the Iran deal for years, where we would just meet. Like, we would meet to discuss what we were going to discuss at a future meeting.
And it also makes perfect sense coming from him, too, because it's also very, like, it's a very corporate strategy.
Yes.
This is, like, something that, like, a giant corporation would, like, issue some proclamation, you know, about...
That they're looking at removing the sugar from Coca-Cola, but they haven't actually gotten to the point where they're thinking about how.
And then we could celebrate them because, you know, they're going to take out all the sugar. Right. And then, you know, 12 years later, that has
sugar
happened,
everywhere.
Yeah. Sure. I don't know where that example came from, but...
I feel like Coca-Cola is always a go-to also if you want to point to some sort of evil corporate behavior.
Yeah,
like,
especially
when
we're
talking
about
long history.
Healthcare.
Yeah. Sure.
Like, what could possibly be causing all these diabetes?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe a company that has the longest possible history of corporate behavior and therefore is an example of all of the things.
No. They are thinking about making Coca-Cola better.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But so in any case, this executive order would, if these changes were actually eventually proposed by the people that they're supposed to be proposed by, it would make it easier for small businesses to purchase something called health association health plans, which are currently only offered to big businesses. And they are not subject to some of the rules that govern the healthcare laws that Obamacare sells in the exchanges or that the ACA sells in the exchanges. So, like, for example, they don't have to cover prescription drugs. They don't have to cover substance abuse treatment. They don't have to cover mental health care. And so these plans are junkier plans than the plans that Obamacare mandates.
Requires.
They were given as sort of like an out to big corporations to kind of get them on board with the policy because they're cheaper than the regulated
And also
plans.
These association health plans, what it allows smaller businesses to do is to enter into, the reason they're called association health plans, is they can enter into like a group with other small businesses to be able to offer like the same health insurance that these larger corporations can.
Exactly.
It basically like brings their cost because small businesses are required to, all businesses are now required to offer their people healthcare. So this like allows them to basically like become a larger corporation by just sort of like entering into like a group with some other small businesses.
Exactly. And one of the big obstacles that the ACA has had is that it's really too expensive for small businesses.
Right.
And that is an issue that needs to be addressed. The problem with addressing it this way is that association health plans can deny coverage to certain groups. They can set their rates based on the health of those groups. So they can create the kind of tiered healthcare system that we came out of when we left the pre-ACA days behind. They can say, you know, that this group of companies or this group of people that are small businesses, you know, are too old. And so their healthcare is going to be $7 million a month.
Right.
And we're going to insure this group of 22-year-olds as a separate group for $7 a month because they don't have any health issues.
Yes.
And because of that, it opens the door to discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions. It opens the door to a tiered healthcare system.
Right.
And that is very dangerous.
Yeah. And there's a couple problems with that because... So if they offer these junk plans, the people who are going to take those are going to be younger and healthier people. There's two problems with that. One is that everybody is a young and healthy person until all of a sudden they aren't. And you can't know when that's going to happen.
So they're old and disgusting.
So you have this junk health plan that you got when you were 22. And, like, what are you going to do? You're going to, like, turn 28 and be like, oh, I should really – I'm going to probably get cancer next year. So, like, I should, like, up my – I should get one of those other health insurance plans. Like, that's not reality. So, yeah. Like, inevitably, you're going to get one of these junk plans when you're 22. And then you're going to be hosed when – you get something where you all of a sudden need a prescription drug for something, or you need,
and you are also going to attempt, once you realize you are going to need to use your health care, to get a more robust plan and find that you're priced out of that market because all the young healthy people are in their own marketplace with the $7 plans.
And that is the other problem is that the way that we have been able to bring costs down to a degree is that you force young healthy people to buy the same insurance as everyone, so they are paying into the system. If you take them out of that system and, like, have them buy junk plans, then the costs have the potential to go, like, to skyrocket for everybody else who's not on these junk plans.
Yeah.
So there's major problems.
This executive order also contributes to this problem in a couple of other ways. One is that it expands employers' ability to give their employees cash to purchase coverage instead of purchasing the coverage themselves. That is a way that companies often scale back benefits, because if they provide you with just the premium money instead of providing you with the health plan itself, you're then left to make choices about what kinds of services you're willing to cut out. And they are not then mandated to give you what the cost of a full, robust health plan would be. So when you and also then, you know, you can use that money towards things beyond the premiums sometimes, but you then end up with less money for the premiums and you have to pay those out of pocket. So say your company gives you $400 for health insurance every month, which sounds like a lot of money. If the plans on the individual market are all $450, then you are out of pocket for those $50. And then on top of that, those plans might have a huge deductible. They might have all sorts of other issues. And once we're in a situation where the prices of plans are going up, healthy people are dropping out of the market, what you end up with is less money in your pocket because your employer was able to convince you that they were giving you coverage while they were in fact not. Yeah. And then the third thing that it does is it allows more kinds of consumers to purchase short-term coverage plans. This is something that Obamacare mandated. These are kind of junky plans that you can only be on for 90 days that are for people that are between gigs and going through life changes and things like that. They're super cheap, but they don't meet any ACA requirements, and they are allowed to reject people if they want to, which is what health plans used to be able to do. So they can pick and choose. They can cherry pick their customers, and so they can make sure that the plans are cheap because they can pick only healthy customers. But it means that healthy people have options that sick people don't have in the marketplace that are cheaper, and it means that those sick people are then isolated into their own death spiral of death, and then, you know, it makes it more expensive for all of us, ultimately, because all of us ultimately get sick. We all get older every year. We all get grosser every year. You know?
That's true. That one is true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, that's how you throw out your back.
That's exactly. Yeah, I threw out my back.
Just trying to have a little fun.
Yesterday, dancing.
Yeah.
And I wish that were false.
Yeah. You know what? Can't get health insurance anymore.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pre-existing condition.
I learned a lot. I also learned that Brent uses the word hosed. Yeah. So 22-year-old got hosed.
Brent loves folksy. Brent's from Iowa, and he loves like a folksy.
Is that a folksy? Hosed?
I was going to say it's like a play at the millennials. Like, he's like, sorry, I was busy on my Snapchat filter. Don't want to get hosed.
I feel like it sounds like something a silent movie star would say if they could speak.
That would be the only thing.
That's the only circumstance where hosed was.
Didn't Charlie Chaplin, when he started speaking, everyone was like, no, better without.
He had a weird voice, I think.
I'm Charlie.
Yeah.
That's got to just be demoralizing.
I mean,
just to be like, we liked you better when you didn't speak.
That's what being a woman is like, you guys.
Oh my, are we getting to that? We're getting to that.
We're getting to that.
Yeah.
A lot of thoughts about that. Just before we move on from healthcare, so these cost share, these co-payment subsidies, they're called a bunch of different things that are all long-winded. About 6 million people qualified for them, and they are one of the most contentious things about these executive orders, because Republicans also realize that this will drive up the cost of healthcare for their you know, their constituents and just general poor people.
Oh,
and,
yeah. I mean, this is already, I think California has already said that they are now, because of this money that they're not going to be getting from this, are the rates are going to go up 12.5%.
Yeah.
They just said the other day. And that was in addition to the 12% they were going to go up just
exactly
just this year, just because of, for the whatever Evality. Reason that they were going up.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a lot of freaking money.
It's a lot of money. Like, so, there, but so this is because the 2018 elections are a thing that's real.
Right.
Republicans are sort of worried that they are now taking ownership of a problem that they have been trying to blame on the Democrats this entire time. And so there is a bipartisan bill that would address specifically these co-payment subsidies. And it's by the same dream team that's been trying to come up with some sort of bipartisan bill this whole time and failing, Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray. They have a bill that Trump was asked about on, well, Nick Mulvaney was asked about it on Friday and said, absolutely not, he would never. Trump was asked about it on Saturday after speaking to Chuck Schumer and was like, maybe we could work something out. So nobody's really clear.
Chuck and Nancy.
No one's really clear on where the Trump administration
stands. I love how
he's
always like, as I like to call him, Chuck and Nancy. He said that a few times.
Yeah.
Before Trump is like...
Like, that's their names, so that makes sense.
Yeah, he's like tweeted that.
Their legal names. Right. Uh-huh. It's kind of my thing. I call them
by
their
names. I call
them
Chuck and Nancy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's certainly not anything that anyone else could have come up with in there. Yeah. But so, in any case, it's not really clear where he stands on this, but I think they're planning to use it as leverage to try to get funding for the wall and his tax cuts. That seems to be where Nick Mulvaney landed on it after he was forced to explain why, after he said that they definitely weren't going to play ball.
Yeah.
They were suddenly interested in playing ball. We have a budget situation looming on December 8th, so we might have a shutdown. We might have threats of a shutdown that no one delivers on, which seems to be a Trump classic, a threat that is not delivered on. We might have some wrangling to try to get some weird border security measures and other things that would meet his approval but aren't a dumb wall. We'll see what happens. But so it's there is a lot of interest in Congress in making these payments reappear.
Yes.
Because they are one of the quickest ways to make your consumer, your constituents hate you, is getting rid of these.
Yeah.
So this is something that I feel like there has not been much organized action around these executive orders because they're executive orders. And what are you supposed to do? Call the president? But for this, because Congress could address this if they really put their minds to it, this is one that I would call your representatives about. And I would call your representatives about it even if you live in a Democratic state, just to express your general outrage.
Yeah.
And probably their lines are free for once.
Right.
If you live in California, maybe can chat
with
a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in any case, that's what's going on in healthcare. We also had a side crisis that we prepped you for last week, but is real this week, which is that we are Trump decertified the Iran deal.
Yeah.
He didn't reinstate the subsidies, though. So, like, in essence, he's just decertifying it to be like, see, I can decertify the deal, and he's not doing anything.
Yeah. This is just him sort of like getting angry and like, because everybody says that the president, like, every 3 months or I don't know how long it is, like, basically has to like recertify it, which isn't necessarily like, if you decertify it, he's not saying that we're, like, getting out of it.
Right. He's just saying Iran hasn't kept up their end of the bargain.
Right. Which
but he's doing it based on no evidence.
Right, exactly. Because every expert and every other country who is in on this deal is saying that they are keeping up their end of the argument. So he's basically just sort of, like, pissing on it just because he can.
Yeah. He's also still referring to this weird mythical thing he claims happened where this $1.7 billion in assets was physically loaded onto an airplane and flown to Iran. But it was actually a...
Remember that pallet of cash?
Do you remember the pallet of cash?
Oh.
He's still talking about the pallet of cash.
No.
Which, again, has been debunked not only because there was no pallet of cash, but also because the money that we returned to them was their money
was
in the first place.
Right.
It was assets we had frozen and then we were returning to them. So, but he spent his announcement on his plan to decertify the Iran deal talking about this.
Yeah.
So he's back to his campaigning talking points, I guess, about Iran. Apparently Nikki Haley was a big force behind this, which is Politico reported that most of his cabinet was not actually interested in decertifying the Iran deal because they're less suicidal than him. And Nikki Haley was, for some reason, like, super into it and was like, I'll lay the groundwork. So she's been going around delivering speeches about how Iran's not keeping up their end of the bargain for months now. And she finally was the devil in his ear.
Huh.
Mulvaney and Haley just
you
chatting
go on
away.
Infowars.com once and
exactly.
your life changes.
Right. It's just Nikki Haley. Seriously.
God. Yeah.
I think he's just jealous because he has never personally had his own pallet of cash, I think.
Yeah.
And that's why it's still in his brain.
Well, he has,
and
then he keeps losing it.
Of course.
It's always being flown away from him. It's not being flown towards him. He has a hang-up about that.
Yeah.
That's how he's asking to keep all his money in that. Like, he's like in a plane, constantly flying on pallets.
Right? Yes. I want it to be physical cash, and I want it to be in the air at all times.
Just the things he says he sees. Is nuts, and he's so sure of it.
Yeah, he saw it with his own eyes.
Like he saw Muslims cheering on 9/11. And everyone's like, no, that's not true. And he's like, no, it is. I saw it.
Yeah. In my imagination.
When you're delusional and potentially senile, I believe that maybe he did see that.
That's true.
It could have, I don't know where. I mean, it was in his, he saw it in some sort of fever dream that he had.
Right.
Like, so, you know, when you can't tell reality from your fever dreams.
Then our reality becomes fever dreams.
That is deep.
Thank you so much.
I'm philosophy, taking that. Care.
Taking that to an open mic.
Yeah.
Slam poem.
# brain trust live philosophy.
Yeah.
And it was also a big week for sexual predators of other stripes as well.
Big week.
Yeah.
Big week.
The biggest story of the week. And the reason that nobody bothered to find out what exactly we were talking about with those Obamacare executive orders was because of this Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, we were
debacle.
Busy talking about a decades-old story about Harvey Weinstein.
Jesus Christ. The reason we didn't talk about this last week was literally we talked about it and I was like, listen, this story broke last year and I am sick of us pretending that we don't know about sexual assault until we decide that we know about sexual assault.
Yeah.
Like, this is an open secret. It's been known. It's been reported in press.
Yeah.
For a year now.
Yeah.
And also has been an open secret in Hollywood for decades.
And since we've decided caring about it, like now, like every day I see like a new thing that's just sort of like, here's a clip of so-and-so from 1998 in an interview talking about how Harvey Weinstein tried to rape her. And it's like...
Well, we had all these clips, you guys. We watched these live when they happened.
Right, exactly. It was, you know, they were on David Letterman talking about it. Like, what where have we been?
I will say that this has given me an interesting insight into the mentality of the still with her people. Stay with me. So
I don't know where this is going at all.
Yeah. So we were Sanders people on this podcast. And one of the things that I always said was that, you know, the sort of historic nature of the Hillary Clinton run for president, as exciting as it is to have a woman run for president, it never felt as historic as I felt like it should have, because she was such a source of continuity. She was, she was not representing a change of any sort. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, and because there are a lot of reasons that I took issue with the way her campaign operated and was carried out, not like on a conspiracy theory end, but just on a, like, they didn't read the signs end, like willfully, you know, willful ignorance end. I feel like my disappointment with the lack of, you know, the fact that campaign didn't succeed and the fact that Trump is president is not super tied to the fact that there was a gendered element to the campaign. So, like, while I see it, I also, like, think, because my opinion has always been that if two women were on that ticket, it would have succeeded. I never really saw that was the central problem. That was one of the problems, circling the problems. Sure. But it wasn't the central problem in my mind. And I have sort of struggled to figure out why people who just, like, who can only talk about the gendered aspects of that campaign are still only able to do that in the face of all of these other things that the Clinton campaign kind of fucked up. And why the Bernie bro myth still exists, why there's still all of this sort of gendered anger towards the Sanders campaign, as if that was like some sort of male chauvinist campaign that came in and tried.
We saw it this week where they were all enraged that he was going to speak of the women's.
Right. In any case, if you were someone who was relatively new to politics, who didn't see Hillary Clinton as the sort of, you know, continuity candidate, and who didn't see Hillary Clinton as someone who had betrayed your interest in the past as your representative and things like that, this has sort of given me some insight into the mentality of, like, a disgusting troll of a white man is always the final word on a woman's life, no matter how powerful they are. And it's because, like, all of these people like Angelina Jolie and Gwyneth Paltrow, all of these people that we think of, that are Hollywood A-listers, that we think of as the most powerful women in Hollywood, all of them have had an experience at some point in their life where, on their rise to, you know, being taken seriously, a disgusting troll of a man did something inappropriate with them, and they didn't say anything because he still ultimately held all the strings. And, like, to this day, like, why is it that we have not heard about these stories from these A-listers?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Who are now A-listers. And it's, yeah. It is because Harvey Weinstein is still the guy holding all the strings, even though they're A-listers, even though they're powerful. It doesn't matter how powerful you get as a woman, you still have some disgusting troll who is, like, the sexual predator who you can't, you know, who you can't take down.
You can't take down, right.
So I have been having an interesting, and if you think about the election in those terms, then it's very right. clear why these women cannot stop talking about this issue, because that is really what happened in this election as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I hadn't really been thinking about it in those terms, and I have been frustrated because, you know, because of all these accusations of sexism yeah. in the Sanders camp and all, you know, all of this stuff like that. And I feel like this crisis of this sort of like PR crisis that has exploded in Hollywood has kind of helped me understand what that rage is about, because that is a rage that I feel in my professional life often.
Sure.
But I hadn't really connected it politically to it the way that I did this week.
All right. Interesting.
But yeah, a disgusting troll is always the final word on your life if you're a woman. Yeah. That's the message here. It's gross. And he is gross, by the way. So, like, it's, like, really gross.
Yeah.
It's, like, always the grossest men. The other thing that I wanted to talk about with this, though, is that the Manhattan DA's race has been really heating up because of it. So, one of the pieces of evidence that broke in the midst of all of this information coming to light is that the Manhattan, the NYPD ran a sting operation against Harvey Weinstein back in like 2013 or 2015 or something. And they wired a woman and had her go in, and she was assaulted by him, and they got the evidence, and they didn't prosecute.
Did you hear the audio? The audio is so troubling.
So disgusting.
I haven't heard it.
It's so horrifying.
I can bear it. If you're, there's this other audio of a man getting eaten alive by grizzlies, a grizzly man. And that was, I like sat back and I was like, that was the most jarring audio experience I've ever had since eating, like, grizzlies eating a man. Because he just is so persistent. And she's like,
yeah.
I don't want to go in your room. And he goes, go in my room. Don't embarrass me. Go in my room.
Yeah.
Don't do this to me. Go in my room.
Yeah.
It's like, I've never ever heard or talked to any, or like experienced or like... Right, even with
not a microaggression. That's a macroaggression.
It's a macroaggression.
Right. It is insane. Even for women who've been like, oh my gosh, this was unwanted, or like this felt really iffy. Like there's for me, it's always been in this sort of like, okay, well, it's these. What are we learning from culture? This rape culture that has us to act in this way. And he isn't a rape culture. It isn't society. It's him being a despicable human being.
Yeah.
Who literally she goes no no no, and he goes, don't embarrass me. Come inside. It's insane. Yeah. It was so jarring because it literally opened.
Well,
I also think that a lot
of the time when you hear, like, when you hear conversations specifically from men like this out of the context of you being in the situation and you being guilted into being involved and you know, like that kind of thing, it is always so much more on the nose than you think it is.
I think that's the thing, and it's
like there have been times in my life where I, and this is not a sexual assault story, but it's a story about sort of gendered workplace issues, where like it took me months to be like, oh, wait a minute, he said the word that is the word that you're not supposed to say, you know, he said I was being abrasive, or he said I was whatever, like he said the word, he gave me all the clues, and I was just in the situation and didn't realize that he was being a dick, and I thought it was my fault, but in fact, he said the actual word to me. Like, it was the exact word that you're not supposed to say that genders it. And, you know, like, that happens so much even just in, like, regular life.
Yeah,
and so this is, like, he's just, like, raping people.
I think that's what's
words.
So jarring.
It's so on the nose.
Right, I'm like, 2010 or when Joe Biden came, like, that's where we had these, like, groups. And these were the conversations. And none of it, all of us were like, hey... If a girl's like, hey, no, I don't want to do anything, you don't do anything. And everyone's like, agreed. And they're like, let's talk about these small micro, let's talk about these. Like, that was the conversation.
And you hope that, like, you would hope that you still, like, I feel like there's a little bit of concern that, like, you stop having the conversations about those, you know, gray areas or microaggressions when you sort of, like, see something like this and it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm not doing what Harvey Weinstein did. I'm not grabbing pussies. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, it's like you sort of,
I respect women. I don't.
Right. It becomes less important to have like discussions about things that we should be talking about. Like things that, you know, like gendered words in the workplace. When it's sort of like, well, I didn't rape anybody.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so true. That is scary. Because back then it was Biden, like we were everyone was feeling good.
Yeah, we were really like, getting there. We were talking about like sexual assault on college campuses and
diving and into now it wasn't even like no means that we're all like, of course, but but what are
but
ways
how do
that
I
we're
make
hurting?
Sure that that, yeah. that I heard the no?
We've got so much back in time that now it literally is like, oh, that's what no means. No means. Let's start at square one.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Don't rape
know the
people.
Word no when I ask you if I can rape you and you say no. That
don't
means,
threaten me after I say it.
That's
the.
That's so true. That's what's scary is that back then the discussions we were having were super interesting and I like still think about them and. And Joe Biden even was like, all right, let's get to the nuances of this. Like, the agreement is we all get this.
Right.
And then now
we're not
it's like, this is the
to
least,
commit sexual assault. Right.
The least nuanced thing. Oh my gosh.
It does, though. It is interesting because it's happening on the 1 year anniversary of the pussy grabbing video.
Yes.
And it's also interesting. So, quickly about this Manhattan DA's race. Cy Vance, who is the DA in Manhattan and is running for reelection, and usually the DAs are sort of like run unopposed forever until they decide to retire, is running unopposed because the primary has already passed. And these revelations, as well as some revelations that he declined to prosecute Ivanka and Jared for misrepresenting some real estate transaction. So there's sort of two Trumpian-style scandals in his midst, have created a write-in candidate who ran in the primary for the Brooklyn DA and did not win, but he is allowed to run in the Manhattan race because he's never run in Manhattan before. And so he hasn't run in this race yet. And so so now there's a guy, Mark Fleidner. He's a civil rights lawyer who lives in Brooklyn but is willing to move to Manhattan if he gets the job, who has launched on Tuesday this like write-in candidacy. And if I've learned anything from the de Blasio victory, it's that we shouldn't count anyone out in New York City until the votes are counted.
Sure.
Because that primary was wacky as all get out. That was the one where Anthony Weiner was going to be the mayor of New York.
Yeah.
And Bill de Blasio was like a nobody who had zero people interested in him being the mayor and was just sort of like running a weird fledgling campaign by himself in Brooklyn. And everything changed over the matter, you know, over the course of a couple weeks, and all of these powerhouse candidates fell out. And like, I feel like New York could pull this off, is all I'm saying.
That would be amazing.
It would be awesome. Yeah. Cy Vance, by the way, is the son of Carter's Secretary of State. So that he's been really coasting on his dad's reputation a lot.
Sure.
He's been an asshat this whole time. But he's kind of been under the radar, and everyone's like, Carter, he's fine. But Harvey Weinstein is not having a great week in the movie biz either.
No.
Because he's been ousted from the Weinstein Company. He was just ousted from the motion picture, what is it? The Motion
Picture
Arts and Sciences.
Arts
Academy
and Sciences.
The Oscars people.
Yeah.
And he... I heard a rumor that his brother is actually who set this into
people
motion
have been saying that.
Because they hate each other.
Yeah, his brother doesn't have nice quotes.
They're both assholes.
Right.
And now we're all like, well, thank God for Bob Wine. It's like, no.
No.
Don't like that guy either.
Right.
Yeah.
That may have been a miscalculation on his part because the Weinstein Company, by the time you listen to this podcast, may just not exist at all.
That's right.
Yeah. So if his master plan was to take down his brother and then take over the Weinstein Company, which wins Oscars all the time, he might have been a miscalculation.
The Weinstein Company that was complicit
part.
In his brother's sexual assault for decades.
They all knew.
Right, exactly.
Also, his wife left him.
Yes.
Something
Chapman.
Else. There's all this stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not having a good week. But you know what?
I always forget that she's married to him because I see her a lot because I'm a Project Runway viewer and she shows up every once in a while.
I just found out who she was.
She's a fashion designer.
Yeah.
She's the head of Marquesa.
Yeah, something
heard of. That's a word.
Yeah, something I would have never known.
Uh-huh.
And
she's quite lovely.
I didn't know until this
quite
moment.
Lovely. Yeah.
Well, lovely enough to dump his ass. But thank
I know.
God.
I like that.
Yeah.
I do too. I mean, I'm not like good for her. Like,
right.
Because like,
but also,
she can't,
like,
she can't stay now. But I mean,
where
like,
were the clues?
Was she completely clueless about this like up until now? Like, that's hard to believe. But anyway, I mean,
people have married Donald Trump multiple times.
Multiple times. Right. Exactly.
So in any case, and then We have the Value Voter Summit.
Yeah.
As if all of this pussy grabbing was not enough.
Right.
Trump delivered one of his special star speeches at this event. He is the first sitting president to address the conference. He did. He hastened to remind them that multiple times.
Yeah.
He because promised no he would
one,
go back.
No one would ever think to go.
He's saying that proudly.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, I'm the first person to do this dumb thing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
no,
exactly.
That's not. Don't be proud
no.
of it.
No.
Don't be the guy.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And he went on. That was where he went on his weird tangent about he's taking Christmas back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The White House is launching maybe one of what could be their only successful campaign of the year to bring Christmas back to the holidays.
Yeah.
And then he also had one great quote, which was, in the last 10 months, we've followed through on one promise after another. Oh. I don't have a schedule, but if I did have a schedule, I would say we're substantially ahead of schedule.
It's not how schedules
work. It's not how his schedule works either.
Because he doesn't have one.
Yeah, right. He's not familiar.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. Right. I don't have a concept of achievements, so I've achieved a lot. Really, Donald? That's amazing. Good for you, buddy. That's also, what? How is that?
No.
What?
I know.
Well, but it's like a way for him to vaguely declare victory without having to, like, he loves a vague victory declaration.
Yeah.
He loves to declare that he's won at something that hasn't been defined yet.
He's got to be so mad that George Bush landed on that that boat and it said victory or we won.
I know. the fake declaration of, I know.
In the middle of a war. What did it say, the banner? Did it say...
It said something like achievement or... the fake end of the Iraq War.
Hilarious. Yeah.
And, where we won.
We won. I might have literally said something like, we won. It was the funniest, cheesiest banner, and George Bush landed.
And that was, at the time, the height of, like, silly propaganda photography.
Totally.
Like, this guy is on a whole new... He's like...
nothing.
This guy is on a whole new level of... I mean, this guy is literally propagandizing his own handshakes.
Yeah. Also, Values Voter Summit, delightful name. You go, how fun.
Oh, yeah.
Those people sound like they have a great time.
He spoke right after they learned about how, homosexuality is a public health safety and various other things.
That was one of the sessions. One of the sessions was, I think it was exactly that.
Yeah.
And how much gay sex is happening at this summit?
So much. There's a lot of bathroom stall toe tapping going on at the Values Voter Summit.
Do you think it's even possible to pee there?
No. Not safely.
No.
Not safely.
That's like a RNC. Vice did a thing where they went on Grindr.
Grindr at RNC, yes. Uh-huh.
And it was all,
all of everyone.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Everybody's screen name was on the DL, basically. Like, some sort of like... face pictures.
Right.
Only.
Go to every Republic and say that thing you think about, you can do.
Right.
Right?
You can do that thing you think about.
Come to California and we'll just let you do it.
There's so many people here that would love to do that thing you think about to you.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's
so much easier.
Show yourself.
Listen, right.
That's all I'm asking.
These fools are not the right people. This is for disgusting people. Right,
It's so... And Southern Poverty Law Center has said they're a hate group.
Yeah.
They are a hate group.
Right. Yeah.
This is a summit of hateful people who talk about hate at a group together. That's what a hate group is.
There it is.
They're holding an event about what they hate.
Hateful people together in a group.
Yeah.
A hate group.
That's right.
Exactly. Also at the Value Voter Summit, Steve Bannon was there.
Yes.
Just like shit talking Mitch McConnell at every possible turn.
Sure.
He is not happy with Mitch McConnell. He blames Mitch McConnell for the loss of... Well, not for the loss of, because he was a Roy Moore guy. But he blames Mitch McConnell for not giving money to Roy Moore when Luther Strange was going to lose anyway.
Oh, I see.
He threatened to primary him. Not personally, but threatened to raise money for a primary. And then maybe threatened to kill him? I can't quite tell. Because the quote... He was asking about whether Mitch McConnell was watching the Value Voters Summit on TV from up on Capitol Hill and said, because I've been getting calls. It's like before the Ides of March. Which, for those of you who are not Roman history fans, is right before Caesar's BFF turned on him and killed him. So
that's amazing.
So good.
He then said that he was using it as an analogy. But
an analogy for the person in power turning on the person that they're supposed to be working with and killing.
And then killing them.
You know what my favorite thing is when Trump says, is going to say something like, you know, a lot of people are talking about Julius Caesar doing great things.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Like when he talked about Frederick Douglass.
More and more.
Julius Caesar in the news again. Yeah. He's got really great plans.
Finally really getting the recognition he deserves.
His playbook in terms of backstabbing. This morning I was listening to NPR and they had someone who, I don't remember what, but he was basically Team Bannon. And they're like, does it bother you that like Republicans are just infighting and that gives Democrats a chance to do whatever? And he was like, I would rather have Mitch McConnell out than Democrats. Like Democrats elected is fine. I want Mitch McConnell out because
he's stopping
us.
Let's work together, guys.
I know, right?
We can make this a reality.
Well, yeah.
The NPR person was like, a little bit of like hope. And I was like, no, that's not really. I was like, I don't know if that's hope.
But that is the peril of working with the Trump administration. It's like, don't try to work with these people. Mitch McConnell should have come out and been like, this guy's an asshole and we want nothing to do with him from the get-go. Because he was going to end up in the same situation anyway.
Yeah.
And maybe he could have had some excited people behind him when he tried to run against a primary challenger if he hadn't been such a failure at everything this whole time.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because he's saying the same thing. I mean, Bannon now has an army that he's like, Mitch McConnell is not accepting that Donald Trump's victory is a nationalist, populist movement. He's sticking to Republic. So he's like, so we're going to fill in every Republic. So he's basically like, Republican Party changes to Donald Trump, or we're going to spend ridiculous amounts of money. This is a billionaire, whatever, politician, man, person. You know, like, we're going to kick them all out. And I was like, this is insane. You like, Republicans, for not having a backbone, are paying the ultimate price, which is amazing. Because they should have been like, hey, actually, no, Republicans, here's what we stand for. Blump, like,
right. Well, and they used to be so good at messaging. Yeah. This is so disappointing because they were beating us constantly because of their superior messaging. Right. And like, where is that? We don't have any still. So like, they could still be winning if they could figure out their messaging. Not working. In any case. And then one final update on the story that we didn't talk about this last week, but if you're like a human being, you heard about it.
Yeah. Football again.
Yeah, yeah. Where Mike Pence marched out of a football game because he was so angry they were kneeling.
He went specifically to march out of it.
It was like a stunt that was clearly planned with the intention to march out. The Colts and the 49ers.
Right.
And weren't the 49ers who started all of this?
I mean, yeah, Colin Kaepernick last year played for the 49ers, and they have like, because it sort of started with them, they have continually had more people doing this than other teams.
And then also, the Times reported that one of Pence's staffers told the pool reporter that was traveling with them not to even bother going inside because they were probably going to be leaving early.
Oh, yeah. No, they knew.
So the whole thing was planned.
She winked after she said that.
He flew there specifically to leave.
But here's what he did in flying there specifically to leave. He spent $250,000 of taxpayer dollars in taxpayer money to make a political statement at a football game as a stunt. That's the fun new update. Also, he has not yet responded to the fact that in the run-up to the national anthem, he posted a photo on Instagram of him and his mother looking really excited about the game.
It was an old photo.
It was from 2014.
That's amazing. That's like when I texted an ex and I was like, I'm fine. Check out this hot girl. And it's like me.
Yeah, exactly.
3 years ago.
Yeah,
she's like, it's dated 2012.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm fine.
Yeah. It's like all my Tinder profile pictures.
Yeah. It's like all of the world's Tinder profile pictures.
That's so good. Yeah. From a Colts game in 2014. Be like,
so
enjoying
no
the
comment
game.
From the Pence camp. Yeah. But apparently it was worth the money.
No comment from the Pence camp is going to be an autobiography that someone writes. Totally. Being like, we are so sorry. Like,
it's
going to
be
no
called
comment.
Mike Pence supports the president.
Right.
Yeah, or like different things of he's an unconventional president.
Right.
He's going to have unconventional means of messaging. All right, Mike, just say you hate it. Just say you hate it, buddy.
Yeah, he should write a book about that.
I know.
About, or his press person should, or something. Whoever's releasing these statements. Like, all of the ways that we have said that we
should not do anything.
Secretly disagreed with something by saying that we vaguely agreed with it.
He came here to disrupt, and he's disrupting.
I think what you're seeing is that he's disrupting.
And the president can speak for himself.
Yeah.
And then he walks away with his tail between his legs.
His whole life, at
another one for the book.
It's him with his tail between his legs.
So
and the one time he gets let out of the lab, it's like to go make a dumb stunt yeah. stadium and you know at what? A football
he
game.
He probably would have liked to have stayed and watched the football game.
Yeah.
You know?
He's texting. So he was like, Don, please.
He's a Colts fan. Back from all the way back in 2014.
It was like a double whammy for him. He was taunted by, like, you know, getting a nice ticket to a Colts game and then, like, being forced to leave.
Here's what I wish would have happened. Donald Trump tweets, like, 2 minutes before he leaves, I can't believe Mike Pence left.
Right. Yeah, I know.
I can't believe Mike Pence will leave
walked
in half an
out
hour.
During the national anthem. How dare he?
Totally unplanned. In 30 minutes, right. He will leave.
They did have a Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter post at the ready that they posted at once that was all the same thing happened right as he left.
There was a timeline. There was genuinely a timeline that was like, he left the stadium 8 minutes later, all of these were ready. Like, that's a lot.
Well, they're social media mavens over there at the Pens camp. Yes. There's one thing we know about the Scared of Women camp, is that they're great with social media.
And if there's one thing we know, he's an unconventional president.
Right.
And he doesn't speak for me.
No.
He just doesn't.
No. But I support the president.
My book in 2025 when Donald Trump is, in jail.
When I become the reality star and Donald Trump is in jail.
No, he can't be a reality star. He's too boring.
Yeah, he's got dumb hair, too. Yeah. In any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back next week a little later than usual.
That's right. We're traveling
next week. But we'll be here.
Oh, my gosh.
We're always here. We do it, you know? Yeah. We make it happen. So stay tuned for whatever's to come of the rest of Puerto Rico falling apart and also Donald Trump trying to become the executive order king.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I'm going to give you, I don't know if this is part of it.
Go for it.
I'm going to give you things to plug some of my friends raising money in Puerto Rico.
Oh,
who are, for sure. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Celebrity chefs and one is a celebrity. One of those people that you're like, I don't know what you do, but you're on TV.
Yeah.
And you speak.
Fine. Good enough.
Those are two of my, and the celebrity chef is amazing, and he's doing stuff there, and he raised $1 million on like a random GoFundMe.
Wow. That's amazing.
Which is insane. Started it. He was the guy whose parents that I was talking about, parents, 6 days. So he's one of my best friends. His name is Manolo Lopez. So if you're listening, go to, and I'll tweet about this, and we'll put it up
on with the description so that people can find the link easily. The link.
Perfect. Yeah. So check out that link because unfortunately the government is failing the good people of Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And just found this out. They're American, which is crazy. Yeah. Which is
50% of Americans not familiar with that fact.
Oh my goodness.
In any case, we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.